we had the lessons at the local coffee shop, breakfast place, and reading, yeah. and now we put them into action. I would consider it a strength of mine, but it was certainly a skill that I lacked for the first significant part of my life.
Welcome to the How Leaders Think podcast, a show that transforms you by renewing your mind and giving you new ways to think. I'm your host, Kenny Lang, and with me today is the Brian Brandt. He is the president and founder of Core Insights. He holds a master's degree in global leadership, so he might run for president, and a bachelor's degree in accounting, which there's probably a good story behind that. He's an expert in communication, leadership, and staff and board engagement, and has worked with countless organizations across the country. He's also co-authored two books. I highly recommend them. Blind Spots, What You Don't Know Can, all caps, Hurt You, and The Ambassador's Journey, which is a parable about nonprofit board leadership. Welcome to the show, Brian.
All right, Kenny, thank you so much for having me on and excited to get this party started.
It should be a party indeed, especially if I didn't turn off my reactions and my Apple. Sometimes if I do like this, then we'll get like confetti coming down. So just be prepared. It can be a little bit of a wild ride. So tell me, Brian, what is on your mind?
You know, a lot about planning. And I'd say that a lot of times this time of year, you know, end of the year is when we're at right now and thinking a lot about planning. A lot of people are requesting some strategic planning and those kinds of things for the following year. Right now, I'm working on updating a 10-year plan for myself. Wow. And then also, you know, getting more granular for my own 2024. Mm-hmm. And so a lot's on my mind related to planning. And, you know, a lot of times I'll say creating the life we want. And so that is something that I've been thinking a lot about, and I really believe it. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, I'm kind of wrestling with the fact that, you know, trouble is sure to come to all of us in some way at some time. And so it's, you know, the best laid plans, you know, that kind of mindset. But I've been wrestling with that, and I still believe that having that discipline to plan and execute mm-hmm. is important. And, yeah. but when I get some pushback about, well, you know, things happen. I mean, last week I'm an early bird, Kenny. And so
God
I
bless
was
you. Headed to,
you there with me?
No, I'm not. I've tried to be, and I have been in certain seasons, but it's, I don't know what it is. Maybe it's kids. I just make me like, well, I got to get up and get them to school, right?
Yeah. And I will say we could do a whole podcast on seasons of life too, but,
preach.
You know, I was driving in early to the office, which is kind of my practice pretty often. And it was probably 5:45 in the morning. And I saw a significant accident. And I thought, you know, that early in the morning, you know, somebody probably was on the receiving end of a bad decision by another driver. And, you know, they had plans to get to the office early too, probably, you know, and here is this significant disruption. And so there are those, you know, there are those disruptions that happen and we need to be mindful that that's going to happen at some point in our life, very, very likely. But yet I think planning is important. And I will say in there, Kenny, that I haven't been a lifelong planner. I didn't grow up with that mindset. That's been more of, an acquired skill than a natural ability, for sure.
Gotcha. Well, that gives me hope because the planning isn't always my forte, at least personally. I'm really good at helping other people do it, but not as much for myself. Kind of a cobbler's kids without shoes situation, right?
Yeah.
Now, you brought up several different things, and one of my favorite quotes on planning is from the great philosopher Mike Tyson, which is, everybody has a plan until they get punched in the face.
Yeah.
But when you talk about that, and obviously in your profession, you're called in to help develop those strategic plans. Like you said, you're working on it for yourself and your company and helping others. But if everybody was doing this, like probably you and I may not have much of a job. If everybody was just naturally doing that, believed in it, and was working on it, what have you seen in the marketplace in your years of experience that leads people to not step into designing the life, the business, the organization they want, when there's so much studies and proof now of the benefits of it? So what's still so strong in the thinking in the marketplace?
Yeah. My speculation, Kenny, would be that some of it is a lack of a role model. They haven't seen it. They haven't seen it done, and they haven't seen it done personally or professionally. Mm-hmm. I think some of it is probably that they haven't really given it the consideration. And, a lot of decisions are made with them in mind, what's in it for me. And they may not see the real benefit, and mm-hmm. really go, why does it matter? What's it going to do for me? And then I would say some of it, quite frankly, is probably a little bit of laziness or, laissez-faire. Well, I'll just, what's got me here has worked. And,
worked well enough.
But yet a lot of times people are, they are frustrated with their current spot in life. And I would propose that if they would have planned 10 years ago, they might be in a little better place.
Yeah. Something I've thought about along these lines, and not just planning, but really anybody setting an intention to change the course of how they're living, how they're operating, just, I'm here, but I'd really love to be over there, is sometimes I think people are, they get joy or they are getting something out of complaining, right? Mm-hmm. Or just bemoaning the fact that life is not better. Right? Because you do have agency to change things, to make decisions, to live differently, to engage differently, show up differently, or not at all. Is that something you've come across where maybe, people don't do things repeatedly unless they're getting something from it? Mm-hmm. Is that something that you've ever come across?
Well, I think so. But I think also you hit on an interesting point that I think a lot of people don't really feel like they have the control. They can make the changes that will impact their life. And they do. I think they do feel more reactionary than proactive. Yeah. And again, I think some of that is, in the people they hang around or, the mentors or lack thereof. I think it's, the whole you're around the five. You become the five people you're around the most kind of mentality. And if you look around and everybody's just kind of living life and dealing with what comes at them, then you probably haven't seen anything or experienced anything that is mm-hmm. different.
Yeah, I've seen several posts lately on Instagram where it says, like, if you're around five smokers, you're going to be the sixth. If you're around like five fit people, you're going to be the sixth. If you're around five wealthy people, you'll be, that sort of thing. Like, it works for and against you. When you've mentioned the term and the word mentor quite a lot, and it's one that the idea of mentorship is fascinating. I probably need to, sit down and write and get my thoughts together. So this could be a stream of consciousness, but I'm curious, where do you place, maybe the word responsibility may or may not be the right one, but say, I am that sixth person and I'm hanging around five people who are not, they are reactionary. They're just taking it as it comes, and they're saying, well, because of the X, Y, and Z, I'm not able to do this. Like, they're creating all these things that give them excuse to not change how life is going for them. Is it on that sixth, on that person or on me to go and say, well, I want something different. I'm going to find a mentor? Or do you see it more as like mentors, people who have broken through, need to be on the lookout for those people with potential and say, I'm going to pull you up? I have some of my own thoughts that might be convoluted, and you and I could talk about, you know, some biblical, you know, grounding around that, based on some examples in the Bible. But where do you stand as it pertains to mentorship, and who's initiating, who's finding who?
Yeah. So your original question, I'd say the answer is yes, it's on both, you know, but the reality is, I think it's more on the person who wants to be mentored. Okay. I mean, you think about it, and I'm going to be kind of extreme on this, but you know, if I walk into Starbucks right now and I start walking around and, you know, talking to people, hey, my name's Brian, would you like me to mentor you? I mean, that,
right.
That is probably weird at best and creepy, you know, and, But again, I'm being a little bit extreme that, but I think it can come across as arrogant, you know, if you were to go out, you know, going, hey, would you like me to mentor you? But there's probably a place for that. I mean, that really hinges upon the relationship. But I think, I mean, my gut would say that if you took 100 examples, 90 of them probably are and should be the mentee asking the mentor, you know, really seeking somebody out that they trust, that has the expertise in a certain area. And those kinds of things, I think it will work a lot better. Now, I will say there's probably some times where you go, you know what, that person's probably not going to ask, but we've got enough relationship and I've got some expertise. And in those situations going, you know, hey, you know, this is something I've done in the past for others. Would you be interested in that? I think that could work and could work well. Yeah.
Gotcha. Yeah, I obviously see the, you know, the pretentious nature of, hey, I'm wise. Would you like to come? And it could come across weird, but having that eye open maybe for, do you see somebody who's trying to move in a direction and maybe they're struggling? Obviously, there needs to be a relationship. It's not transactional. I don't think a good mentorship relationship is ever really transactional. What you used a term of designing the life that they want. Can you expound on that and what your thinking is around that based on the context of planning and what you're working on?
Yeah. And I think it fits for a company. I think it fits, you know, and that'd be for-profit or nonprofit. I think it fits for a department. I think it fits for individuals of really taking some time. And again, that's kind of why I like, you know, usually what I do, Kenny, is I start in November, just putting notes on my phone as I kind of go along. And then as we get into December, I start to kind of refine that. And then at some point, I take a day or two away and really formulate it. But it really is about, where do we see ourselves? And this is one of those where in a lot of my coaching sessions, not all of them, but in a lot of, or I should say with my coaching clients, that at some point, it depends on what they're coming to me for coaching for. But a lot of times I'll take a big whiteboard and, you know, what's today's date? Where are we? December 7th. And so I might say to them, okay, I want you to imagine December 7th, 2028. What do you want life to look like? And I want you to think as holistically as possible. You know, think about physical health, think about relationships, think about career, think about finances. Think about your spiritual life. I mean, geographical and just, you know, as exhaustive as you can. What do you want life to look like at that point? And then I usually give them a dry erase marker, Kenny, and I say, come on up to the whiteboard, and I walk out. You know, I was like, I'll be back in about 10, 15 minutes. And I just let them go. And then from there, you know, asking some refining questions and all. And usually I say, hey, you know, take the next month to refine this, because some people, you know, I'm pretty positive, Kenny, that I can put you on the spot that way. And you're great. And other people are going to be more reflective and they need time. But it's a starting place. And then to go from there to go, okay, if that's where you want to be, you know, December 7th, 2028, what are some good things for you to plan for and aim for in 2024? And then I just walk them through, because it is, again, it's that creating the life you want. And again, mm-hmm. I'm kind of wrestling now with, you know, roadblocks, obstacles, challenges, they're going to come.
Right. Right.
But I still am confident that if we do that, it helps us to say, you know, these are the things I need to kind of create and arrange, you know, mm-hmm. so it may be for some people, it may be a master's degree or finishing a degree or something like that. For other people, it's going to be things like, I need to foster stronger relationships with these people, mm-hmm. you know, that kind of stuff. But then it helps us to know what to say yes to and what to say no to, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, Kenny, when was the last time somebody walked into your office and said, hey, how can I help you accomplish your 2023 goals? You know,
Well, I office from home and I don't feel like my kids are very helpful at all, or they don't care about my goals.
Maybe I'll talk to them soon.
You probably, they would benefit from a session with you. But yeah, it's not often. I mean, I'm fortunate enough to have a couple of close colleagues that, you know, are available when I need it, but they're usually not initiating saying, hey, like, you're working on this, what can I do to help you along? But to stop and think about it, sometimes I for myself, I know, even though I do this professionally, like, I'll get so busy focused on, oh, I got to do this next. Like, life just moves quickly and I don't really get my head up to go, oh yeah, I need to sort of have a spot I'm picking and connect the dots. And what I feel like I hear you saying is, it's sort of a Stephen Covey of begin with the end in mind sort of mentality.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's well said, for sure.
So as you think about that and you're helping others, when you're working, say, with a team in particular, like maybe a senior leadership team or department level, higher level team, what are the things, you mentioned obstacles, and I think often probably the worst obstacles are the 4 inches between our ears, but what are some of the common obstacles you see to these high-level leadership teams and planning and thinking ahead and really engineering the department, the company life that they want for themselves and the people that they're fortunate to lead?
Yeah, you know, the number one that I think is discipline. And it's that discipline to consider our goals regularly, to be mindful of what it takes to execute, and then to consistently go to that and go, this is what we're doing. And this is, you know, keeping everybody on track, I guess, and focused on something that's bigger than just the day to day. So that I think would be the first one, the mm-hmm. first obstacle. And then I think somewhere right in there pretty close is trust. And that trust between those senior leaders mm-hmm. and that executive team, and going, you know what, do I really believe that they're able to execute? Do I really believe that they have the company's best interest in mind, that they're going to be bold and be out, you know, do what it takes? Again, that goes back to discipline, because I think a lot of people will not do what it takes to accomplish these things, you know, whether it's learning a new skill or just pushing ourselves outside of our comfort zone. And I don't say that lightly. I mean, just going, you know what, I'm not, you know, I hear, well, I'm not a very confrontational person. Well, but you're on an executive team and you've got people that report to you and they're not perfect. And so, you know, oftentimes I'll say in some of my trainings, you know, look at your job description and are there any bullet points that say, you just be you? Probably not. You know, we, to accomplish things, we've got to kind of, we got to push ourselves.
Yeah. Yeah. That's really good. I'm curious if, just because you have so much experience with both for-profit and nonprofit teams, do you see any differences between the way those two groups operate? I mean, obviously there's probably a slightly different mentality between the leaders there, but is there any difference in obstacles and mentality around that?
I would say not inherently. I think leadership, it's very similar in both places, and that level of strategy and planning and execution and discipline and trust, all of those elements. But I will say, you know, I'll back off of what I was about to say and just say, no, I don't really think there is a significant difference. And I've seen, you know, fantastic nonprofits that operate as good or better than some of the best for-profits. And if you took that same leadership team and plopped them in a for-profit company, they would be equally as successful.
Wow. Yeah. It's sort of a like, well, people are people. Like I get that question asked of me, like, well, is there a size of company that is too big when you're working with us? Like, I was like, probably not, because there's still people in the company and they're the same. I had a coach tell me once, that he went and spoke with like this 1500, 1600 person company. He's like, their problems were the exact same, Kenny. The only difference is their balance sheet had a few more zeros added to the end.
Yeah.
So when trying to develop that discipline, and what I feel like it sounds like is the sort of the consistency of alignment, right? It's not we had the big thing, because I know it can be, it was for me early on in my leadership, was to look at, there's these big moments as a leader, like you're making the speech, you're rah-rah, you're making the big plan. But you would feel like, well, we built this big, beautiful plan. It was perfect, and we clearly articulated it. Nobody really had any questions. Everybody got excited. What happened to it? It sounds like from your perspective and experience is that the magic is really in those smaller moments, that consistency of execution.
Absolutely. I think it's largely comes down to the daily, hourly, weekly disciplines to execute and to focus on what really matters, you know, not to be, you know, it's easy to get distracted. But if we are clear on what our priorities are, you know, and I guess that goes a little bit back to what I said about it helps us to know what to say yes to and what to say no to. You know, most people, I don't find very many people that have a lot of extra time. And I think that it's easy to get distracted on things that aren't our priorities, you know, that somebody walks in and says, hey, will you do this? And it's not a bad thing. It's probably even a good thing, but is it the best thing? And is it really what needs to be focused on now? And, you know, I'm not intentionally using the word discipline this much, but it's happening. It's just, you know, having that discipline to say, you know, that's really, you know, Bob's responsibility, or, you know, I can't get that to that in the next few days. Figure out how to get it done.
Yeah, that made me think of two sayings. One is a great question that's been helpful for me is what's mine to do? Is just clarifying, because I can, as leaders, I'm lumping all of us together, I guess, for a moment. But we can tend to think it's all mine to do. We have that driven nature, that ambitious personality a little bit. And we say like, oh, I want to help there. I want to do that. Nine times out of 10, I'd say it probably comes from a good place of just wanting to be helpful. We feel capable, but that's not always the enemy of what's best is what's good.
Right.
Right. Like it's that distraction, like you were saying. And then setting some healthy boundaries with yourself, and almost like the I've heard over the years, having a to don't list is as important as having a really good to do list.
Yeah.
Now you mentioned you know, several minutes ago that the planning wasn't always natural to you or a part of your regular discipline and habit. What did you do to sort of cultivate that in yourself? Was it going out and finding a coach, finding a system, a framework? Was it piecing it together, you know, one little discipline at a time? Because I have to imagine there's probably several, you know, visionary type leaders that are just, hey, I'm moving fast and I got big ideas. I'm going to do these things. And I hear what Brian's saying and it's important, but my God, how do I slow down long enough to add these pieces in to help myself when it feels like it goes so much against the grain?
Right. Right. Well, and I share this story in the book Blind Spots that there was a time, and you'll find this part interesting. I was going through Leadership Tyler and I was working on my master's in global leadership, and I'd taken an assessment that really helped me to pinpoint that I didn't really have vision and planning as part of my leadership skill set. So at this point, I was probably 32-ish, and I just didn't have that kind of growing up, and I didn't have it really, despite the being under some great leaders in my first 10 years mm-hmm. of my career, that just wasn't a part that I gained from them. And so I identified it, that it was lacking, through an assessment that I took. And then I sought out a mentor. There was a gentleman that I knew that had his dad was a 3-star general. He had a strong military background. He, after his military career, he went to med school. And so, you know, super sharp, but quite the planner. And quite the vision kind of guy. And so I asked him to mentor me, and he said yes. And again, I asked him to mentor me specifically on that aspect. Okay. So not just a general. So I was very clear. And so he showed up at our first breakfast with a notebook, and I'm not kidding. It was this thing. It was probably for those of you just listening, it was probably about four or five inches thick of things, of articles and things. And then he signed some books and things like that. But just, we did a lot of reading and a lot of discussion. And then Hurricane Katrina hit New Orleans. And it turns out that he and I ran a shelter at UT Tyler for Hurricane Katrina evacuees. And that was a place that we really put into place that vision and planning because it was fast. It was basically one day I went to the city and said, hey, if y'all need anybody to lead a shelter, give us a call. It was a group from Grace Community Church. And about 4 hours later, they called and said, all right, we've got a shelter. And you know, we had no manual. We had no background. We had no experience. and I would say we ran a great shelter. And I give so much credit to Scott for the way we did that. But that helped me to see it. You know, we had the lessons, you know, at the local coffee shop, breakfast place, and reading, and now we put them into action. And so, you know, it now is, I would consider it a strength of mine, but it was certainly a skill that I lacked, you know, for the first significant part of my life.
Yeah. It sounds like a lot of effort goes into acquiring the skill, especially if it's not one you just naturally or like, gifted at, because you can sort of take those for granted at different times.
Absolutely.
So with if someone's listening and they're saying, hey, yeah, I'd love to think more about planning or just cultivating something in myself. I think there's lots of great little nuggets sprinkled throughout what you had to say. But if somebody's wanting to get started with that initial baby step, next 24 hours to start moving towards being more intentional, designing the life they want, and planning what they want to have happen maybe in the next year, 3 years, 5 years, what advice would you give them to get started on that path?
Yeah. So I really would, I would say get away to a place where you're not going to be interrupted much. And, you know, people, how people get motivated, lots of different thoughts about that. But I'd say bottom line, get you a big old piece of paper and ask yourself that question. What do you want life to look like? And I think depending upon stage of life, mm-hmm. if you're early in your career or late in your career, 5 years is probably great. If you're in the middle-ish stage of your career, 10 years is better. But if that's too daunting, then I'd say go back to five. Okay. But don't go less than five. It'd be real tempting. So again, what do you want life to look like 5 years from now? And then once you've done that, you know, bounce it off some people and then go, okay, well then what should happen in 2024? And, unless you're listening to this in 2026, and don't do that. So what should the next year look
2020
like?
2020X, just insert exactly. Next number there.
You know, so basically what's this next season look like, you know, and just keep breaking it down and going, okay, well then this is what I need to do. Over the years, Kenny, the number of times people said to me, I feel like for my career to go well, I need to go back and finish my degree. And so I'll say, well, what's the next step? And they kind of get a little bit of pause there. And I'm like, well, do you know how many credit hours you currently have? And they're like, no. And I go, okay, so maybe contacting the college you left, that'd be a good start. And then going, okay, where might you go to school? Okay, getting on campus, meeting with, you know, the registrar or an advisor probably better that.
Yeah.
And, you know, just those two steps, it gets you off being stuck, you know, and it typically goes better after that, you know, but it's that what's that next step kind of thing.
Gotcha. Love that. If somebody wanted to know more about you, Core Insights, your work or your books and your content, where would you send them?
I'd go to the website, coreinsightsleadership.com, or go to my LinkedIn. It's Brian K. Brandt, and that's B-R-A-N-D-T. I think those are probably two best places to go. And would love to engage and discuss any of this further. You know, we do a lot of coaching, a lot of strategic planning, but we do even more training. Both on the for-profit and nonprofit side.
Excellent. And we're going to link all of that up in the show notes, along with links to your books, Blind Spots and The Ambassador's Journey. Again, those are the fantastic resources to go get some really cool thinking. One is a parable, and it's a great story because I've cracked it open already. I'm trying to hurry up and learn. Well, Brian, thank you so much for being a guest. I hope this isn't the last time that we have you on to share some of your wisdom with us.
Well, Kenny, it's my pleasure. Thanks. And always appreciate you and just the way you push and prod and ask good questions that help really formulate some neat thoughts and ideas.
Thank you. I like to tell people I get paid to do what got me in trouble in school. And for all you listeners, thank you so much for taking a little time out of your day. If you got value out of this, would appreciate a review, a like, a share, whatever it is. Help more people find this and get the help that they need. We want to help as many leaders as humanly possible. But until next time, remember, change the way you think, you'll change the way you lead. We'll see you.